Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. And welcome to Bookworm. Today, my guest is Deborah Eisenberg, whom I have the privilege of having spoken to, I think, from the time of her first book, All Around Atlantis, yes?
Well, my very first book was Transactions in a Foreign Currency, but and we have been talking for a
forever.
Long time.
Debbie has a cold today, and I think it's only because this is Bookworm that she has surrendered her bed. She does have a glass of tea. Her new book is called Your Duck is My Duck, and it's a book of short stories, six of them. Deborah's short stories have been amazing since she figured out how to write the first of them. I'd say that the most recent stories are asking questions about language and what it has become in our predatory, insincere, and awful times. There's actually a very unusual and great story called The Third Tower, in which a character who has too many thoughts, too vibrant, is taught just to call a tree a tree. Language is removed from her because her excesses are conceived of as unnecessary. This is to be the result of this story, a world without poetry, a world without the imagination of literature. Tell me, how did that story come into existence?
Well, actually, it's a total mystery to me. That was the last written of these stories. And I don't really know where it came from, except from the conditions that you just described so perfectly. And I would say that just sheer rage wrote the story, and despair. Of course, it's sort of a funny story, or
they're all funny.
Yes, I think so. Michael, I just really want to take one moment to congratulate you on the award, which you so richly deserve, that you got last night. I just wanted to take that moment and say congratulations.
Thanks, Deborah. Last night I was awarded the first Deborah Pease Prize by the literary magazine A Public Space. Deborah Pease was the founding benefactor of A Public Space, and the prize honors someone who has advanced the art of literature, I guess me. People wrote tributes to Bookworm and to me. It was one of the magical nights of my life. Thank you, Debbie. It was extraordinary. You see, I think that this book runs a spectrum of stories. From the loss of language, language stolen because there is no language sufficient to saying what needs to be said. And so a doctor has been called in to take this woman's language away and replace it with the bare bones. We see this because in the very first story, Your Duck is My Duck, language has become so electric, effervescent, hilarious, that of course there would have to be a government movement to suspend language if we all spoke so wittily and so well. I'm going to ask you to read the first couple of paragraphs, three paragraphs of the first, the title story, Your Duck is My Duck.
So from Your Duck is My Duck at the beginning. Way back, oh, not all that long ago, actually, just a couple of years, but back before I'd gotten a glimpse of the gears and levers and pulleys that dredge the future up from the Earth's core to its surface, I was going to a lot of parties. And at one of these parties, there was a couple, Ray and Krista, who hung out with various people I sort of knew, or anyhow, whose names I knew. We'd never had much of a conversation, just hey there kind of thing, but I'd seen them at parties over the years, and at that particular party, they seemed to forget that we weren't actually friends ourselves. Ray and Krista had a lot of money, a serious quantity, and they were also both very good-looking, so they could live the way they felt like living. Sometimes they split up, and one of them, usually Ray, was with someone else for a while. Always a splashy public business that made their entourage scatter like flummoxed chickens, but inevitably they got back together, and afterward you couldn't detect a scar. So that's the first three paragraphs thing.
Well, imagine a narrator telling us that there was a before the time I'd gotten a glimpse of the gears and levers and pulleys that dredge the future up from the Earth's core to its surface. What an extraordinary, extended, preposterous metaphor, because we never glimpse these gears and pulleys really, but we have an intuition of how the world works.
I mean, the gears and levers and pulleys, you're absolutely right. It's our intuition of the way the world is expressed from the past into the present, and its future expresses itself through the workings that have been prepared. There is, however, later in the story, a puppet show, highly political puppet show, which employs gears and levers and pulleys.
So not only does it employ them, I mean, the show, although not in its version performed, the show is called The Hand That Feeds You, which also is an insinuative title. It's biting the hand that feeds you. And the puppeteer is biting the hands that feed him. The conditions of grants and wealthy people who pay for him to be at an unknown shore, perfecting this multicasted puppet show with animals and owls. I mean, an incredible thing to essentially say to this couple, you're not doing us any good beyond giving us the opportunity, the free time to make our work. And that should be ours anyway. You're rectifying a condition that can't be justified, right?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, there, this very wealthy and attractive and extremely intelligent couple is responsible for phenomenal environmental damage.
Yes. And you see, it suddenly struck me that the language of art, the narrator of this story is a painter, staying with her at the rich couple's mansion, compound, in a place that's being emptied of its native peoples. They can't live there because of the conditions. And yet the rich are maintaining, at least for the moment, their digs. While the narrator describes all this in exquisitely ironic post-human terms. Now, what do we need to do to such a narrator if we are among the good-looking wealthy? We need to get her tongue out of her mouth.
Right, right.
We need to destroy what she has to say. We must not hear the voice of dissent, and in order not to hear it, we must immobilize the voice of dissent. And so we get to this story called The Third Tower.
And, of course, the language of dissent, which is far, far from the reach of the protagonist of that story, The Third Tower, is simply related to thought, basic analytical, critical thought. And that is really what is being reduced in that story.
The book, Your Duck is My Duck, by my guest, Deborah Eisenberg, the book is also on a recording. The publisher is Echo. They're a division of Harper, and Harper Audio has put out an audio book in which Deborah and Wallace Shawn and
Julianne Moore and Josh Hamilton
read the complete book. And that story, The Third Tower, which is basically a two-person story, is read by Deborah Eisenberg, my guest, and Wallace Shawn, for many years, her partner and close co-worker. Debbie and Wally read the story to one another, and what an experience. He is playing the doctor who removes Deborah's language. And somehow, as mysterious as the story is, the reading is still more mysterious.
Oh, good.
Because it's a love duet. It's incredible to hear this doctor gently, sanely, and tenderly removing this woman's ability to think. And I've been playing it as if it were popular rock music, because you write frequently in cadenzas. You move from extravagance to extravagance. So it's like listening to an LP of really good songs.
Oh, that's fabulous. And I knew that the others could do it. I knew that they would be just superb at rendering this very, very complex and highly cadenced language.
And in the final story of Your Duck is My Duck, a boy who's been raised in the Middle West with no indication that the family has anything but farmers and aunts who cook meals, he learns that the uncle who left home has died. He has been invited to the memorial service in London, where he will discover that his uncle, an architect, not just an architect, but a gay architect, with projects that have involved solar energy, the most ambitious, which in the time of the story will come to be built. He, this nephew, will be like Debbie and I. Debbie, the brilliant and well-awarded genius grant provided writer of short stories. Me, the bookworm, this boy leaves home to become a member of the outside world. You have to, if you want to get anywhere, you have to escape. Was escaping the family a big order in your life's work?
Well, yes, I would say not just the family, but the expectations for me, which were low, to put it politely, by almost any measure that was in use at the time, was simply, I didn't register on the scale. And I think when you speak of that final story, which is called Recalculating, and your history and my history, I think so much of the joy of life for me, and I see it also with my students, you know, they're writing students, they're wonderful people, and a certain number of them no doubt grew up being considered weirdos. And so much of the joy of life has really been a matter of a kind of recognition, coming to a place or meeting a few people or reading something and thinking, oh, yes, that is something that embraces me, that includes me, that I include, that has something to do with the way I've been constructed by whatever forces, genetics, history.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios at Carnegie Hall. We're visiting New York, where I'm talking with Deborah Eisenberg about her collection of stories, Your Duck is My Duck. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Deborah Eisenberg about her collection of stories, Your Duck is My Duck. Hilarious, charming, delightful, solemn, mysterious, gentle, compelling, complex, and disturbing narratives from a master.
Well, thank you, Michael. That could hardly be better.
You'll never be able to stand up after this.
No.
These stories have appeared all over in the New York Review of Books, in many of our current literary reviews. I mean, the Third Tower story was published in Plowshares, a marvelous literary magazine. A story called Taj Mahal was published in the Paris Review. Your Duck is My Duck, the title story, was published in Fence. What's happened? Where do writers now go?
Beats me. I mean, to those places. And I really don't know. There are certainly many more writers than there are outlets for writing. There's some awfully good periodicals and quarterlies, but certainly not enough to encompass what is out there.
I've been enabled to be crazy about the magazine A Public Space. We, the readers of the United States, have to find the magazines. and subscribe to them and support them, because the state that people used to contemptuously call the welfare state, if only it was welfare, no longer supports the magazines, the poets, the people. I feel that one of the things that writing implicitly tells us, as in the story Recalculating, is that there is another way of to live than the way you've been told to live. You have to find it. You see, it's not just writing. If you want to read, if you want to live the alternative existence, which is a part of being alive as a sensitive being, a real creature, a weirdo, a special one, now you've got to do it yourself. It's not going to be easy.
I'm now thinking back to what you were speaking about in regard to the story of mine in the book called The Third Tower, and correlating that with what you were just speaking about, the necessity of finding your own idiosyncratic life and way to live. And I do think that, of course, it's always been hard, but I think that there is now actually institutional pressure against that, tremendous pressure, coming really from a political impulse to keep people not only from dissenting, but from observing, from thinking, as well as from speaking.
I am talking to Deborah Eisenberg, who you must be able to guess takes my breath away. We're going to close with the recording from the end of the story, The Third Tower, of Deborah and Wally reading what inadvertently becomes a love poem, because they are essentially singing together. The doctor just wants her to say what he said. He doesn't want her ideas about it. If he says coin, she's to say coin. If he says tree, she's to say tree or moon. And she's crying. Tears are flooding her eyes with the effort to keep the vast majority of language out. And she's really trying to be what they want her to be. And thank whatever presence there is, so far none of us have become that thing.
Later today, the others will take their weekly salaries to the mall, as they do every Sunday. Earrings, nail polish, maybe a new game, a t-shirt, a treat. What would she get if she could be with them? Tomorrow, a new week will begin with more tests, and they say they'll be able to measure exactly how well the drugs are working. Thérèse opens the drawer in her table and surveys the tidy stack of her possessions. She tucks her book away on the bottom. A little dry crumb clings to the cardboard box. Do her friends at home still remember her? She unfolds her good dress, smoothing the soft fabric and admiring the sweet flowers printed on it. She puts it on and lies down again, falling towards sleep. Yes, she can hear the doctor's voice. Tree, he says. Tree, she says, and a peaceful sensation radiates through her as the word locks down. But then for a moment she feels her unruly heart, her skin, her neurons, the secret language of her body, sending evidence of treachery to the sensors and dials. All around her, behind the wall of locked words, hums the vast, intractable, concealed conversation.
"Coin," the doctor says.
She closes her ears and strains to shut out the noise. "Coin," she says. Tears of effort cloud her eyes.
"Good," says the doctor. "Mirror." His voice is growing softer and more insistent.
"Mirror," she says, and her voice, too, is low and urgent.
"Tower," the doctor says.
She takes a deep breath. "Tower."
"Fireworks," the doctor says.
In her sleep, she struggles to scream, but she cannot make a sound.
"Let's try that one again, please," the doctor says. "Fireworks."
"Fireworks," she says.
"Moon," the doctor says.
I've been talking with Deborah Eisenberg. That was the end of her story, The Third Tower. It's from her new book, Your Duck is My Duck, published by Echo. Deborah, thank you for coming when you have a cold and joining me.
Oh, Michael, there's nothing I would rather do than join you, cold or no cold. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. And I have to tell you that you can hear all 30 years of Bookworm at that website. It's all waiting for you. Here are the voices. It's very beautiful. The reading of books is brilliantly altered when you hear the author's voice. Extra special thanks to New York contributor Alan Felsenthal. Normal special thanks to my assistant and co-producer Sean Sullivan. He wrote that. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director today is Leszek Wojcik. It usually is in Los Angeles, Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Diane Williams is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.